Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tucker Carlson was defending this 17-year-old Trump humper who murdered two people in Kenosha and wounded another. It looks like the person that he wounded might even lose his entire arm. These AR-15s, the bullets that they shoot are very high velocity, and they cause incredible damage. I mean, we learned a lot of this back, you know, with the school shootings years ago, where that young man went in and, well, it seems like they're always young men doing it. But in any case, Tucker Carlson said, and I quote, "Are we really surprised that looting and arson accelerated murder? How shocked are we that 17-year-olds with rifles decided they had to maintain order when no one else would?" Really, no one else would? The police were there. I retweeted a video yesterday afternoon of these right-wing guys. This kid was apparently part of this group, talking among themselves, talking about, and they were right next to the police cars, talking about how the police had said, "We're going to push the protesters into you guys, and then you beat them up." Well, that's what happened here in Portland a couple days ago. And the cops just stood there for 3 hours watching right-wingers beat up left-wingers, by and large, and threaten them with guns. Now, nobody got shot, but people have gotten shot here and in other cities in the past by right-wingers. But this is astonishing. As Keith Boykins over at CNN said, "An innocent black guy is killed by police and Tucker Carlson calls him a thug. A guilty white guy murders two people and Tucker Carlson calls him a patriot." But the point that I would make, and that I haven't heard anybody else make, and I don't know why, and tell me if you think I'm just like way out on a limb here, that I'm crazy. When you buy and learn how to use a gun, and then you travel hours or miles, let's say. I guess you know, Kenosha is only, you know, 15, 20 minutes away from Antioch, Illinois. But you travel to another state with that gun. I would not call that anything other than hunting. How is this Trump-loving kid sitting in the front row of Trump rallies, how is he anything other than a hunter of humans, looking for someone to kill? I mean, I'm reminded of Don Jr. and Eric going off on their big game hunts, and now, you know, we pay for their security when they do it. Looking to kill, I mean, I've seen them with dead leopards, I've seen them with dead elephants, I've seen them with dead muskox, endangered species. They take their guns, they go off on a hunting trip, and they kill something. And it looks to me like this kid, I shouldn't even call him a kid, I keep saying that because he's 17 years old, but he's a killer, he's a murderer, he is a human hunter, a predator. Or am I being too harsh? Or is it, you know, is the media not calling him this because he's white? Is that the deal? Oh, we wouldn't call a white person a predator. Black people are predators. You know, Years ago, Hillary Clinton, in an inarticulate moment, referred to black super predators. It haunted her for the it has haunted her for the rest of her life. It's deep in our consciousness, as I was saying earlier about, you know, medical care in the United States. It's just buried inside there, and every now and then it pops up, at least for white people, and I'm guessing for black people too, because we all grew up in the same damn culture, by and large. The same TV shows, the same movies. And every now and then it pops up and goes, ah! And we're like, whoa, where'd that come from? But with Tucker Carlson, it's just a nonstop stream. It's like, you know, diarrhea on Fox News. It just, it's always coming out. It never stops. But why aren't we referring to this killer as a predator? Why aren't we referring to many of the people who came to these protests not looking to say, hey, stop an injustice? And I can tell you, you know, I'm going to get a call from a right-winger who's going to say, well, what about the black people who came in from out of town to burn down that gas station? Weren't they predators? I'd say, no, they are asking, some of them in ways that are not particularly useful and probably even hurt their own cause, but they are asking that we stop killing them. That's a very different thing from putting a gun in your car and driving to another state to shoot people. I mean, think about this for a minute. What actually happened here? We have human beings, we have citizens of this country going on hunting trips, and they're showing up here in Portland, and this one showed up in Kenosha, and they're taking their weapons with them. Isn't it about time that we woke the hell up to what's going on? I watch the Republican convention. Oh, God. I watch it so you don't have to. It was a gruel. I mean, it was just genuinely bizarre stuff. At the same time that Tucker Carlson was defending this 17-year-old killer, I mean, it gets so strange. Some of the headlines from the right wing, this is incredible. From Outkick, LeBron James is a bigot. From the Washington Examiner, the NBA playoff boycotts are an empty gesture. PJ Media, good riddance, NBA may cancel season in protest of Jacob Blake shooting. The American Spectator, the seeds of a civil war in Kenosha. New York Post, craven Democrats invite violence. InfoWars, GoFundMe, nukes Kyle Rittenhouse, he's the 17-year-old kid who murdered a couple of people. Fundraiser allow the, actually, I'm not going to call him a kid anymore. I'm going to call him a Trump supporter, because that's what he is. He was in the front row of a Trump rally that he had to travel quite a distance to get to. It was in Iowa back in January, literally in the front row. So, you know, this Trump humper is a murderer. And I think there's a connection between the two. Anyhow, the headline over at InfoWars, GoFundMe nukes Kyle Rittenhouse fundraiser allows BLM rioters to receive $1 million in donations. American thinker, lefties try to get Tucker Carlson fired over Kenosha commentary. Town hall, what's behind the violence in America? Hint, it's black people and Democrats. And, you know, on it goes. The Washington Post put together a pretty good fact check. And I want to, you know, quote in part from that, but also from just what I saw. Vice President Pence started out by talking about how Trump saved countless lives in America by putting a ban on flights from China. Well, actually, there were 11 exemptions to those flights, so over 40,000 people came into the United States from China after Trump's ban. 40,000. Trump's ban didn't happen until after 38 other countries had done the same thing. He was a laggard, as they say. And a total of 430,000 people came in from China from January when the virus was circulating in China. So basically, so number two, where this president achieved energy independence for the United States, Joe Biden would abolish fossil fuels and fracking. All of those are lies. We are not energy independent. In fact, we imported, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, part of Pence's administration, in 2019, the U.S. imported 9.1 million barrels per day of petroleum from nearly 90 other countries. And as to Joe Biden doing away with fossil fuels and fracking, well, yeah, that plan spans at least 30 years. He's calling for net zero carbon emissions no later than 2050. That's 30 years from now. Mike Pence said, when asked whether Biden support cutting funding to law enforcement, he replied, yes, absolutely. As the Washington Post says, this is simply false. In fact, I guess the biggest question I have is, are the American people still buying Republican lies? What Biden actually said to CBS, they said, do you support defunding the police? And he said, no, I don't support defunding the police. I support conditioning federal aid to police based on whether they meet certain basic standards of decency and honorableness. And in fact, are they able to demonstrate that they can protect the community and everybody in the community? Pence, this one just blew my mind. In this trembling voice, you know, Mike Pence was, Dave Patrick Underwood was an officer of the Department of Homeland Security's Federal Protection Service who was shot and killed during the riots in Oakland, California. As if Black Lives Matter rioters had killed this guy. He was actually killed by Air Force Staff Sergeant Stephen Carrillo, who is a Boogaloo boy, a right-wing killer. But Pence didn't see fit to point that out. He, you know, a supporter of Donald Trump killed David Patrick Underwood. And Pence, you know, this is bizarre. Pence, last week, Joe Biden didn't say one word about the violence and chaos engulfing cities across this country. Right. Actually, what Biden says was protesting brutality is a right and absolutely necessary, but burning down communities is not protest. It's needless violence, violence that endangers lives. Once again, Mike Pence lying to the American people. Pence continues, after many years of scandal robbed our veterans of the care that you earned in the uniform of the United States, President Trump kept his word again. He reformed the VA and Veterans Choice is now available for every veteran in America. This was a law passed in 2014 and signed into law by Barack Obama. Pence went on to say, 4 years ago, we inherited a military hollowed out by devastating budget cuts. We rebuilt our military. Well, actually, the military budget had declined, but why? Because the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were winding down. There's an absolute one-to-one relationship between the two. Pence went on to say the Obama-Biden administration secretly launched a surveillance operation on the Trump campaign. No, wrong. The FBI did, because Mike Flynn was talking to Russians that he shouldn't have been talking to while he was making the transition, while he was not in office. You know, it's a violation of the Logan Act, if nothing else. I've got a bit more of a rant for you, and I want to talk about the coronavirus as well. There's just so much going on, and then I'll pick up your phone calls. Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman, a couple of white guys, the infamously inept Trump-loving dirty tricksters, they tried to smear Robert Mueller, you'll recall, a year or so ago we were talking about them. They've got a new robocall out. This is the one I was reading about to Tom Perez. Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson today, just a few hours ago, posted an audio clip of this robocall and said, you know, these are basically lies.
Can you just say what's on Project 1599? The civil rights organization founded by Jack Berkman and Jacob Wool. Mail-in voting sounds great. But did you know that if you vote by mail, your personal information will be part of a public database that will be used by police departments to track down old warrants and be used by credit card companies to collect outstanding debt? The CDC is even pushing to use records for mail-in voting to track people for mandatory vaccines. Don't be finessed into giving your private information to the man. Stay safe and beware of vote by mail.
Wow. This is a campaign by a couple of white Republicans targeting African Americans, saying the police will track you down, the IRS will track you down, and the CDC is going to want to forcibly vaccinate you if you vote by mail. The simple reality is requesting an absentee ballot does not put you on any list, period. I mean, you've got the absentee ballot list that the state has, but I mean, any list that anybody can read, the simple reality is if you're registered as a voter, that is a public record already. And, you know, there's people that can acquire those lists. You can acquire that list. But the idea that the police are going to use this to come after you for outstanding warrants, and you know, which means, of course, well, even if I don't have outstanding warrants, if the police are going to be knocking door to door, I mean, look at what happened to Breonna Taylor. It could happen to me. This is voter suppression, and it's evil. They've released the names of the people that were killed by a 17-year-old Trump humper, the Trump fan who stood in the front row of his of Donald Trump's Iowa rally and then went on to murder a couple of people. To Anthony Huber, H-U-B-E-R, maybe it's Huber, was one. He was the hero who actually tried to take the gun away from this guy in Kenosha. And this 17-year-old Trump humper turned around and shot him with it. And he's dead, of course. In my inbox, in my email inbox, I wanted to share with you. I thought it was just remarkable. I was very impressed. Axios has, you know, produces a whole bunch of different newsletters. They've become quite a news agency, and they push them out as daily email newsletters. And one of the ones that I've subscribed to for a very long time, I think probably from the time that it first started, is the Axios Markets newsletter. And, you know, it's about finance and the economy and markets and stuff like that. It's one of the things, probably the two big things that I talk about on this show, in addition to just, you know, kind of raw politics, are science and economics. And so I'm, you know, I'm fascinated by this stuff. And so I've been subscribing to this newsletter for a long, long time, and it's published, it's written every day by a guy by the name of Dion, D-I-O-N, and I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. It's R-A-B-O-U-I-N, Rabouin. And my apologies, Dion, if you're watching this on YouTube or something, you know, days later and I've mangled your name. But he starts out, and now typically this is, you know, this company's buying that company and here's what's happening in the stock market and here's, you know, the Fed just said and all this kind of stuff. And instead he writes, I can't write a newsletter today. And in the next paragraph, he talks about how, you know, the NBA players went on strike. And he says, whenever someone stands up to fight for justice, one must always ask whether that stand is a moment or a movement. Now, this is a conversation I had with Joe Madison a couple of weeks ago on this show. Actually, you know, more like a month ago when we were talking about, you know, the protests around the murder of George Floyd. Is this a moment or a movement? And, you know, we're both very hopeful it's a movement. But anyhow, back to Dion's newsletter. He says, whenever someone stands up to fight for justice, one must always ask whether that stand is a moment or a movement. I hope that what the NBA started last night was a movement. I hope it was a movement for change and a movement for justice and equality. I don't have much to give to that movement, but I have my body and I have my mind and I have this little newsletter that you all read. Maybe I can make a difference somehow by showing that you don't have to be a superstar to take a stand. Jacob Blake was shot in the back 7 times while walking away. To my eyes, he walked away because he was sick and tired of being harassed by armed agents of the state whose occupation is supposed to be to protect him. I don't know Jacob Blake, but I know what it's like to be tired of police harassment and to decide that enough is enough. So did Eric Garner. So did Sandra Bland. So did many others. This must end. I've been stopped, again, this is, you know, Dion, who writes the Axios Market newsletter in his own voice. He says, I've been stopped and frisked. I've been assaulted. I've been thrown to the ground or on the hood of a car and handcuffed by these same armed agents of the state for the crime of looking suspicious or being in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong skin. And I know exactly what it's like to have that pit well up in the back of my throat as I decided that I had taken enough. I was fortunate enough not to end up dead or paralyzed. Whoa, talk about speaking truth to power. He goes on to say, many of you reading this newsletter are CEOs, presidents, founders, and asset managers who oversee billions of dollars. If I have the chance to speak to you and say one thing from my heart, it is this. Understand that there is profound injustice happening in this country, and it has been happening for as long as any of us can remember, and it eats away at us every day. Nothing changes, Dion writes in the last paragraph of the newsletter that I got today. Nothing changes until people decide it's unconscionable for things to continue the way that they are. It feels like we may have reached that point, and I stand with the people who are taking a stand for change. even if all I have is this little newsletter. Absolutely brilliant. The CDC said, no, you may not get a test unless you have symptoms. We're going to start ignoring the idea that there's pre-symptomatic spread, that people who don't have symptoms are capable of spreading the disease, when in fact we know that on average, that would be people in their 40s, 50s is probably the average age of Americans right now. On average, about half of people who get this virus just spread it. They don't get symptoms, but they do share it with other people. They do spread it to other people. Among kids, it's much higher. It's around 90%. You don't get symptoms, but they do spread it. So why did the CDC change their rules? Well, Mike Pence's chief of staff, Mark Short, was on TV this morning on either CNN or MSNBC, and they asked him that question, and he said, because of the backlog in testing, we can't test enough people fast enough, so we need to slow down the number of people going into the testing pool. Which raises the question, why not increase the number of tests available? I mean, we've been calling for this since January. Have the federal government produce tests. Have the federal government order companies to produce tests. Use the Defense Production Act. I mean, there's so many things that could be done. But this decision by the CDC, it's going to make it harder for people to get tests. It's going to make it much easier for insurance companies to refuse to pay for tests. And, you know, we've seen over and over and over again, you show up at an ER and say, you know, I think I should be tested. My son came over yesterday and his wife or girlfriend has COVID or something like that. I mean, I've been exposed. It can cost you anywhere from $1,500 to $10,000 to show up at a hospital ER and simply get a coronavirus test. And insurance companies are increasingly saying, you know, if you're not sick enough to be admitted into the hospital, we're not paying for that damn test. And the CDC just doubled down on this. I mean, this is crazy. And I think what's going on here is that Trump knows that this policy, and by the way, Anthony Fauci was having surgery on his vocal cords. He was under general anesthetic. He was literally unconscious. So they call this emergency meeting to change CDC policy because he's not there. And I mean, I think what's going on here is that they know, and Trump knows, that this policy is going to drop the numbers that we're seeing very quickly. You're going to start seeing, oh, instead of 60,000 new cases a day, we're down to 50,000, now we're down to 40,000. I think we were 47,000 yesterday. Pretty soon we're going to be down to 35 or 30,000. But it won't be because there's fewer cases. It'll be because there's fewer tests being done, so fewer cases we're identifying, which is going to make it impossible to do contact tracing and things like that. But it also means that there's going to be a lot of people running around who are contagious who don't realize it, and they're going to be spreading this virus. So what you're going to see is an explosion in cases. But it's not going to show up in the numbers over the next 4 or 5 weeks. And as Tom Perez pointed out, early voting starts in just a week and a half, 2 weeks. We are very close to this election. Right? I mean, September 1st is next week, and the election's the first week of November. We're there, 2 months away. And so here we are, 2 months out, early voting starts in 2 weeks. And Trump is just looking at this saying, you know, from the time somebody gets infected until the time they end up a fatality statistic is typically 2 months. Takes a couple weeks for symptoms to show up, then it takes typically they get worse on the 10th or 11th day, and then you go to the hospital, and then you're hospitalized for a week or two, and then you're intubated for a week or two, and then you die. That's the course. And so he's figuring, you know, by the time most people have voted, that's when the deaths are going to start showing up. So he's just going to hand them off to Joe Biden, or he's just going to ignore them. To call the Republican Party a death cult is almost an understatement. I mean, whether it's tearing children from their families and letting many of them die, we've had any number of children die, immigrants' children die, in the hands of Donald Trump's ICE, or promoting policies that caused nearly 200,000 Americans so far to die from this virus, or encouraging deadly violence against people protesting racism. Trump and the GOP are all in on violence and brutality and death. And the question is, you know, are Americans going to wake up? The other thing I wanted to rant about for just a minute, and then I'll get to your calls. This story, ProPublica, a great organization. They do marvelous, extraordinary investigative journalism. They've got an app, by the way, for the iPhone. I assume they have one for Android as well. That's a great little news app. They just did a massive investigation across the United States and found that black people are three times more likely to have a limb amputated because of diabetes than white people. Now, what this is pointing to, and maybe I'm just hypersensitive to this right now because I'm writing a book about the hidden history of healthcare that'll be out next fall, but and I keep encountering this in all the research I'm doing. You know, I point back to April 6th when all the media announced the research that found that black people were far more likely, almost twice as likely, as white people to die from COVID-19. And that was the point at which all of a sudden the Trump administration, the right-wing think tanks, you know, FreedomWorks, all these other groups, the Chamber of Commerce, they all started saying, hey, time to open America back up. It's only black people dying. And what gets lost in this conversation, and I think is the really important point to make, is black people are more than twice as likely to die from everything. They're more likely to die from cancer. They're more likely to die from heart disease. They're more likely to die from, three times more likely to lose a limb to diabetes, more likely to die or become blind from diabetes. Does it have anything to do with genetics? No. Other than the impact of having your genetics visible in as much as your skin is dark. That's it. There is no, you know, health-wise genetic reason for this, that black people die at a higher rate from heart disease. You know, they're about the only condition that black people are more likely to have than white people is sickle cell anemia. And sickle cell anemia is not associated with any of these things. And that's it. The simple fact of the matter is that, you know, it wasn't until the 1960s that most black people in America could even get admitted to a hospital. People, African Americans in this country, died with serious diseases at home. I just finished researching and wrote this mind-boggling chapter about Medicare, how when LBJ passed Medicare in 1967 and they put it into place in 9 months, and during that time, they went. During that time, virtually every hospital in America was segregated, and across the South, there were many hospitals that just, period, flat out didn't take black people. And you know, just go home and die. Sorry. And even if you did go to a hospital that took black people, you had to wait until the doctors were done serving all the white people, which sometimes took a couple of days. And when they passed Medicare, the Johnson administration surreptitiously created an alliance with a bunch of civil rights groups, including SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and the NAACP. And they had people going into these hospitals to find out if they were segregated or not, because the law said you can't get Medicare money if you're still segregated. And you had, like, you know, 10,000 hospitals that were segregated in the United States. They desegregated every hospital in America in less than 1 year. And how did they do it? They said, hey, you want the money? Old people are very expensive. They were as much as 50% of the budgets of some of these hospitals within a year or two. That's the one great leap forward we have had in my lifetime in terms of medical care for African Americans. But in every other regard, black Americans are less likely to get painkillers at the same level as white Americans. They're less likely to get chemo. They're less likely to get treatments for heart disease. They're less likely to get treatment for diabetes, and particularly aggressive treatment or any kind of treatment that requires regular monitoring. And this all has to do with racism in the system and the racist assumptions that get built into us by our culture, like the assumption that black people don't experience pain like white people do, which is complete nonsense. I shouldn't even have to say that. Except that, I mean, literally, studies done 2 years ago in hospitals found that black people got fewer pain medications than white people. So when they talk about black people dying at disproportionate rates from COVID, They really need to be pointing out that it's not just COVID. And by the way, that might scare some white people. Because it's not that COVID kills black people. It's that COVID kills anybody who gets it, or has the potential to, certainly, particularly if they're suffering from any kind of medical condition. And black people are more likely to be suffering from those conditions as a result of poverty, but most importantly, racism. Even wealthy black people get worse treatment in our healthcare system than poor white people.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Steve in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hey, Steve, what's going on?
Well, I got to tell you, Tom, I think that it's in human nature, and especially American human nature, because we're raised to be good capitalist consumers, hedonists, Disneyland and binging on Tony Soprano and Breaking Bad, and have fun and ignore the bad things that are happening, like you're on the Titanic and it's sinking, but party on. But now, as you've said, we're totally at a deflection point. Look at the list of things we're facing that we need to get super serious as individuals. We can't count on the politicians. Anthropogenic mass extinction, climate change, people who want a new civil war, police that are on the side of those people, a president who's a gangster and is allied with gangsters, environmental problems, fires, economic problems, people hating each other, gun violence. The list goes on and on. It's time for all of us to grow up, be more responsible in our personal lives, get a spiritual life so that we know how to comfort ourselves as well as strengthen ourselves, and make a greater proportion of our mental space and time to fixing ourselves and this country before it's too late. We are in a fire, but I'll leave you with this. When you saw what happened in Lebanon with government corruption that's pretty much as bad as here, and then that big explosion, the people of Lebanon,
it's far
starving,
worse than here.
Starving in a failed state, they went out in the streets and they threatened their leaders and said, you either do what's right or we're going to come and get you. The American people, other than Black Lives Matter and allied groups, are largely like sheep, sitting back and hoping that voting might change it. I'm saying we have to vote for Biden and Harris and all Democrats and get rid of McConnell, etc. But we also have to change who we are. And every single day, we have to fight the new American Revolution and really make this country great again.
Spot on. Thank you. Joanne in Seattle. Hey, Joanne, thanks for holding so long. What's up?
To me, there's two words that have really messed up the swing voters, the ones that haven't made up their mind, and that is defund the police. Now, you and I know what that means, but, you know, these other right-wingers, they want to, interpret it wrong. So I'm thinking that if us people that care about black lives, if we all boycotted the corporate America, that might help. Like the LGBT people, they've made so much progress all the way to the top, to the courts, to make things legal. So I think this would be a great way to, and they've started it by the football and baseball and whatnot, but I'm talking about boycotting the corporate America places. I know that we're in a hell of a mess with the financial stuff, but What do you think?
I think that's a great idea, Joanne, and it might be a good starting point. The problem with boycotts is that since the economy has become so monopolized, you've got very small collections of very large companies that dominate every industry in the United States now, unlike 40 years ago. It's really hard to have a focused boycott that has any impact. And it's really, in particular, because so many essential goods are controlled by these large corporations. I do think there are lessons learned from what the gay community did for years and years, both in AIDS activism, you know, the whole ACT UP thing, and also in civil rights activism and marriage equality. And part of that was getting very politically active and aggressively supporting political candidates for office who support your agenda. Part of it was being visible. You know, the whole ACT UP thing in the 80s and 90s was really, really, kind of forced Reagan ultimately, or certainly George Herbert Walker Bush, to back down. Reagan refused to say AIDS for 8 years. It was a crime, basically. So I think there's lessons there, but I think the extraordinary lessons that we all learned about civil rights were lessons taught us by people like Martin Luther King and John Lewis, you know, persist and be nonviolent. But I'm not in that movement specifically. I mean, I'm not an African American, so my perspective might be a little different. But did anything I just said make sense, Joanne? I feel like I'm blithering here.
Yeah, I get it. But I think that between defunding the police and then all the people that come into the marches, the rioters, then that's, mm-hmm. you know, it's a setup. It's a setup for the Republicans to say, yeah, they're out of control, you know, and our world is threatened, and, you know, the police are fine.
I agree. And people who are doing property damage are simply creating television ads for Donald Trump. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And it's very unfortunate. On the other hand, you're stuck with this bizarre dynamic where if you just show up and peacefully protest, it never makes the news. Whereas if you set something on fire, it does. But then it defeats you, you know, it hurts you. Joanne, it's a tough one. I don't have an easy answer. Kala in Brooklyn, New York, C-A-U-L-A. I'm not sure how to pronounce that.
Yes.
Hi, Kala. Thank you for calling. What's up?
Well, I wanted to piggyback on a couple of awesome and amazing points you made today, bring up some recent events I don't know if you were aware of. But with the Jacob Blake situation, I very much agree with the, was it the journalist are you referring to from Axios? What's his name, Dion?
Yeah, Dion Rob Owen.
Yeah. I'm a black woman. When I saw him walking away from the police, I said, this guy is fed up. He's walking away. He's like, I'm here to assist in an altercation, and they're targeting me.
He went there to break up a fight.
Walking away. Right. I didn't see him being contentious. I didn't see him being, I saw a frustration, like, oh, you know, it's amazing the perspective of different people. Now, in addition to that, there's been comparisons between the right wing white supremacist, what is his name? Kyle, I forget his last name.
And, yeah, it doesn't matter what his name is.
You know, it doesn't matter. He's a murderer. And, you know, they're showing images of him cleaning graffiti. And then you have Jacob Blake, and they're trying to muddy his image. And the media, they're really the mainstream media, it's just infuriating that the messaging that they're putting out there, you know. The Kenosha police were giving him water. They were encouraging and endorsing his behavior. I see that they were telling them, there were recordings with the taping and the filming, that they were telling them, oh, yeah, we need your help. We need more of you guys out here assisting us. And the Kenosha Police Department has a history of corruption and framing individuals and deceit. It was in 2017 they were under federal investigation for all of the corruption going on, racial disparities and injustice in that same police department. So, you know, I'm really glad that the NBA is stepping up. We need the NFL. They know it. The majority of them have had the same experiences. Even Tim Scott, you know, admitted to it, you know, the lone black senator. So it's just a part of their lives, you know, it's an intricate part of their lives. So we need the NFL, the NBA to continue, the NFL to continue the platform, the WNBA, they've been doing an amazing job, but it just can't be a moment. We have to keep pushing it. And, you know, not just rhetoric. It has to be action. You know, we have to get the representatives out there that are going to push our agenda. They're going to create policies that make real change. We need the action. We just don't need the words. So I hope, you know, everyone's getting it, finally getting it. And then the other thing that I guess I'm just talking. I'm not. The other thing I wanted to discuss with you is you also spoke about the that COVID didn't just is not the only thing that's affecting the Black community disproportionately in the medical field, that it's just a litany of health issues that aren't hereditary. And I wasn't even aware of the fact that in the 1960s, how the hospitals were segregated and Black people were treated last. And, you know, but it's still going on at the present time. Are you aware of the, I'm pretty sure you know about him, Marion Sims, they call him the doctor of gynecology.
He was torturing Black women.
Black women, right? So he said, you know, they're not human beings. They don't need paid medication. And these practices, the mindset, it gets passed on in the medical field from generation to generation. You don't need attended to, need to be attended to. You're not material. And it goes on and on and on and on. And it's just so widespread. I mean, even when Serena Williams was, she came out when she had her daughter, how she was not taken seriously. She suffered from blood clots.
Preeclampsia, wasn't it?
And Well, the preeclampsia, I don't remember that. I do remember specifically that she suffered from blood clots. And she was addressing the doctors, and they weren't listening to her. And then she almost, I think she went into shock. There was something very dramatic that happened. And she's Serena Williams, you know? She's supposed to have the best. And she acknowledged that she was not being attended to, listened to. We have African-American women, we're dying during childbirth disproportionately, you know? It's going on and on and on. So these were just a number of things that I wanted to piggyback on that you highlighted, and they're you're definitely on point. So
great, thank you, Colin. Yeah, and it's not that in my opinion, it's not that, you know, white doctors are sitting around going, oh, I'm going to be mean to Black people. It is deep in the psyche of this country and of anybody who grew up in this country.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Well, police arrested Kyle Rittenhouse, 17 years old, Antioch, Wisconsin, for fatally shooting a demonstrator. He's been charged with first-degree intentional homicide in Kenosha last night. This from Travis Geddes over at rawstory.com. The militia members had gathered to protect a gas station from looters and vandals, and video shows police offering Rittenhouse water shortly before the shooting and thanking him for being there. Another video shows Rittenhouse open fire with a rifle after he's knocked to the ground and then calmly walking toward police vehicles with his hands raised in surrender. However, no police officers are seen getting out of their vehicles, which continue advancing toward the protesters. Rittenhouse then fled the state and was considered a fugitive. He was arrested this morning. So, 17-year-old white guy. This is what happens when you have a mentally ill fascist in the White House. I don't know how to say it beyond that. And I think we just need to, you know, very, very bluntly lay this out and say this is exactly what's going on. Eugene in Chicago. Hey, Eugene, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon. I believe two measures should be taken to begin to address police and state-sponsored terror against the Black community. The first is, I believe the police department should be racially segregated. I don't believe that white people, by and large, because there are exceptions, and Jane Elliott comes to mind, have the cultural competence or the sensitivity to have the decision power to decide whether we live or die. Second, after the police department has been segregated racially, I believe police officers should come from the communities that they patrol. It's a different relationship when you know the police officers and they know you and they know your family's circumstances. What do you think?
Excuse me. I think looking at 40-plus years of science on this, that one of the things we know is that when people live and work in an integrated environment, they become radically more racially tolerant. So I agree with you that police should be coming from the community. Pardon me. But I think that segregating the police would make things worse. You would end up with basically, you know, the Nazi police and the black police. I mean, you know, the white supremacy would go on steroids.
But you'd have the Nazi police in the white community.
I know.
Their terror up on us. Now, if you all
I'm not disputing that.
Nazi and the authoritarian, but we don't want them to continue to heap terror unchecked upon us. We know that the real Nazis have infiltrated the police department.
I get it, and I agree with everything you said, Eugene, except the part about the segregation. I think we need to be integrating the police force.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Aggressively integrating our police forces. But, you know, I'm not a cop. What do I know? I guess really what I should have said was, I'm not black, what do I know? I just can't imagine. Well, I can't imagine, but I'm certain I don't feel it the way that I would if it were real. Having a police department constantly coming after me because of the color of my skin. It's just, phew. Jessica in Chicago, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Jessica, what's on your mind today?
I'm so proud of the NBA for being so strong and canceling their games. I feel like that makes my protesting worthwhile. The last two protests I did for the post office, we were yelled at by the Trump booger boys. They don't even wear masks. And And then I wanted to ask you a question. What happens to all these wealthy people who bet on sports? All these sports people, I'm so proud of them. If they protest long enough, it's going to get the wealthy people mad, too.
Yeah, I don't know, Jessica. I am such a not a sports fan that when I read that the NBA was not going to play their games, I was like, which sport is that? It took me a little bit to figure out that it was basketball. It is basketball, right? Oh, it's baseball. Okay, you go.
It is basketball, but I think baseball's going to do it too.
That's what I ultimately figured out. And now there's talk that, you know, the football is going to be doing it too. And I think that, you know, this is a really good and healthy thing. And this is what happens when people wake up and when you actually empower people who have historically been oppressed. I mean, you've got large chunks of players in all of these sports now are African Americans, and they've got power. I mean, you've got people who are making millions of dollars a year in their salaries, and they are exercising that power, and that's great. This is the Republicans' greatest nightmare, that more black people across the United States in a broader spectrum than just professional sports start acquiring wealth and political power and start saying, you know, we would like to just have the same say the white people do. It's not like, you know, the dystopia that Donald Trump is envisioning of you know, or that was characterized in Birth of a Nation, you know, god-awful stereotypes of black people running things. But instead, it's just, you know, hey, we're human beings too, and we would like to have the same rights and the same say. And by the way, please stop killing us. All of this stuff, it's just, it's remarkable. And we still have such a long way to go. And then you get, you know, these commentators saying, or for that matter, politicians, saying there is no more racism in America. You know, I forget who it was who said it two nights ago at the Republican. It was Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley said, America's not a racist nation. Really? You know, Nikki, let me tell you about Plessy versus Ferguson. Let me tell you about Dred Scott. You know, we're not a racist country? Really? Let me tell you about the Voting Rights Act and why it was necessary, or the Civil Rights Act and why it was necessary, and why would the white guys on the Supreme Court want to gut it? Well, and Clarence Thomas, too. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. Tom in Jerusalem, Israel. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Yeah, Shalom. Hey, I was just wanting to pass on a little Kenosha information. I have an aunt there, and I called her yesterday, obviously concerned, and her son was literally taking her like Pauline Tail to get out of the house because she told me there was word out on the street that they were going to have troublemakers coming in. Now, I didn't get all the information, but, you know, after I see now that there was shootings, this is just surreal. It's just went to levels that are unbelievable. And I mean, just her personal things going on in her life. She lost her husband last year to cancer. Her brother is dying of brain cancer. You know, people have lives, and these right-wing nut jobs are ruining the country. Yeah, it is a death cult. I mean, I just thought I would pass that on because obviously, you know, these police forces, they know about this stuff. It's not a secret to them. Yeah. Anyway, I know you got a long call.
Oh, the cops last night gave a bottle of water to this 17-year-old kid with the gun and said, thanks for being here. And then he went off and shot some people.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, you know, my aunt was just wondering, is my property still going to be here? You know, because there's a whole bunch of, you know, agent provocateurs out there. You know, it's COINTELPRO over and over again now. You know, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Richard Nixon is riding again.
My God.
I'm with you, Tom.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Be well.
Tom, thanks.
Enjoy your
thanks
show.
For the call. And yeah,
be well.
You too. And thanks for watching us there in Israel. You too. Paul in Benton, Pennsylvania. Hey, Paul, it was in Pennsylvania, by the way, that shots were fired last night at this group of 60 Black Lives Matter marching people who are walking from Milwaukee to Washington, D.C. They're in Bedford County. And they're on their way to the anniversary of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And one of their people has been shot already. And then last night, people were shooting at them there in Pennsylvania. What's going on in your state?
Yeah, Tom, you know what? This doesn't surprise me at all. And, you know, we have to start calling it what it is. These guys are not legitimate militia members or anything. The only legitimate militias there are in this country is the National Guard. These guys are armed insurrectionists. They're authoritarians. They're the equivalent of Hitler's brown shirts. There, I said the H word, Hitler. You know, these are the equivalent of the brown shirts. And, they wrap themselves in the flag and the Constitution and on, you know, all the stuff. But, you know, there's nothing constitutional about them. And until we get a handle on this, I mean, you know, this is... They've been waiting for this. Some of these guys are more well-armed than people in our military. And we have to call it for what it is. They're armed insurrectionists. They're authoritarians. And, you know, I mean, they, you know, that this is what they've been waiting for. They've been waiting for this. And I guarantee you one thing. If every Black Lives Matter protester was marching carrying an AR-15 or an AK-47, we would not have this problem.
I'm not sure that's true. I think, Paul, if every protester was carrying a weapon, we would be in a civil war right now. I get your point, and that, you know, a lot of these guys are bullies, and that they might back down when, you know, somebody pushes back. But I don't think more weapons is the solution to the problem. But I'm, you know, in every other regard, I agree with everything you just said, Paul. Jeff in Gurnee, Illinois. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? On the same point, you know, if we take the guy that's getting the water bottle from the police and we make him a black guy, first of all, does he get the water bottle? That's one point. If he's walking away with an AK-47 or a similar piece of equipment in his hand, and is walking towards the police, I think the outcome is different. They talk about white supremacists and the white power thing. They just looked at this guy like one of the gang. You know, hey, he's all right. He's a white guy. If he's a black man, he's down in the dirt. Right?
Yeah. This, no, he'd be dead. What's going on.
He'd be dead or, well, it's a possibility. Yeah, he's got the weapon in his hand. Shoot him dead right in the spot. I mean, for Christ's sake, we're shooting a guy in the back when at any point they could have just put the cuffs on that other guy. They chased him around. It looked like they were
playing right around the road. Yeah, seven times they shot him in the back.
Right, exactly. But at any point, the guy could have, he wasn't running away too hard. He could have slipped the cuff on him and got him. But no, they just shoot him. Just, the whole thing's terrible. You know, we're not that far from Kenosha. And we go up there once in a while, but it's just a terrible situation. Anyone else beside a white guy even shot or laying his face in the dirt? So it's just, that's white power right there.
It really is. This is white supremacy on display, and
exactly.
Let's be very clear. That's what these people are fighting for. That's what Trump was fighting for last night. That's what, you know, Melania giving her speech in, you know, military green fatigues, you know, looking all, you know, hyper Aryan. I mean, this is all about white supremacy. That's going on. And you look at the modern Republican Party and that's what you see is white supremacists and people promoting white supremacy. Yeah. Jeff, thank you for the call. It's, you know, spot on. I mean, this is... what a time we live in. Frida in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Frida, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. Say, I love your show. First-time caller. I just wanted to point out, make a simple correction on your reporting regarding the 17-year-old shooter in Kenosha, Kyle Rittenhouse. You mentioned that he was from Antioch, Wisconsin. He's actually just across the border. He is from Antioch, Illinois, and he came up to Kenosha, Wisconsin. To do his stuff,
To a different state to shoot somebody?
Yep. Antioch, Illinois is across the border south of Kenosha, Wisconsin. And, he is not from Wisconsin and he is not from Kenosha. Yeah.
Wow.
So I just wanted to clarify
this is
that.
So... Yeah, thank you for that, Frida. I appreciate it. It's really nice doing this show with the smartest listeners and viewers in the world. It's just, you know, of any talk show out there. Thank you. Frida, I got to move along, but thank you very much. Nicole in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Hey, Nicole, what's up?
The group of Black Lives Matter people that are marching, they're literally walking, and a lot of us are following them in Wisconsin. And one of the leaders that is not part of the Black Lives Matter movement is Tory Lowe. They have been experiencing in every state, including Kenosha, when they started walking to Kenosha, a gentleman took a huge gun and pointed at them, and he was ready to shoot them. And that guy.
Well, one of their people got shot. Two of their people out of 60. Two of their people have been shot.
Yeah.
In Pennsylvania, right.
Because every place they went, there were counties that treated them beautifully. You know, like the mayor wanted to meet them, they fed them. I mean, so it shows the love of some white people. Like, they never experienced black people in some very remote parts of Indiana, and they said they wanted to walk with them. But the guy that did the shooting in Pennsylvania, Tory Lowe said, please put your gun down. Here's a minister. And he put his gun down, and then he acted like he didn't do anything, and he wanted to talk regular and have a regular conversation and shake their hand. And the police was attacking the Black Lives Matter and demonizing the Black Lives Matter. I'm hoping they'll make it to D.C. alive at the rate they're going.
I agree with you, and I put this at the feet of Donald Trump, although obviously racism in this country goes back 400 years, but he has politicized the police. He has, and he's been doing this for 3 years. He's been doing it for 4 or 5 years, actually, saying that basically the police are on his side. The police are worried about black people. Reagan played this game. Of all the institutions that it is dangerous to politicize, those at the top of the list are the police and the military, the people who carry guns and can legally kill people. And Donald Trump has been doing that. As you point out, Nicole, this is the consequence of it. And so you get this relatively small number of insecure, neurotic, frightened white people, and hate-filled as well, although hate typically comes out of fear, who are well-armed, and this kind of stuff happens. James in Oakland, California. Hey, James, what's up?
The Me Too movement itself is not necessarily about a hashtag or Harvey Weinstein. Tarana Burke is a survivor, and that Me Too is a message of solidarity to survivors. So I think that, like, you know, maybe the hashtag Me Too is not in the Twitter sphere as much, but Justice for Breonna Taylor is just as much a Me Too movement instance. You know, it's, I think that there's a danger in getting it conflated with a hashtag and not seeing the essence of it, that domestic violence and police violence are intimately connected. So that's what I wanted to say about that.
That's a great point, James. And I think, you know, it sounds to me like what you're saying is what I was essentially asking Susie Turnbull is, you know, is this movement, you know, has it gone from this very, very kind of tight, small focus? I mean, obviously it's not small if it represents half of America, but you get my point. Yeah. This one specific focus out into a much broader and more institutional part of the landscape of America. I think that's very much the case. I also noticed a couple of days ago on Huffington Post, there was an article wherein one of the, what you might call a Me Too activist, was specifically saying we need to stop using the word survivors and, you know, need to come up with kind of warrior language as opposed to victim language. You know, I get that, too. And I think that all of that, these conversations, the assimilation or integration or synthesis of different movements and all these things are all good signs. They're signs of a movement that has matured, and that's a good and healthy thing.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.